questions are valid. Large judgment, my own sweet child. Did it teach what I found? I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up, everybody? Shout out to my sinners worldwide. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, as I take you into the conversations, the backstage conversations between me and other lead singers. And I've been busy. I've been very busy. We just did 8 Warped Tour shows with my band Silverstein, and it's over for us, over forever. The chapter is closed for Silverstein. I think there's 5 more shows or something ever that the Warped Tour will do, and it was emotional. There were some tears, and very, very sad to see Warped Tour go. Hopefully next year they still do some one-offs or whatever they do to keep the name alive, but it will never be the same, and it's sad. It's sad. That's all I have to say about that. I've been doing a whole bunch of podcasts, though, out on Warped Tour, and today is one of those conversations I had on the back of the bus with Mr. Tyler Carter of Issues, formerly of Woe Is Me, and a guy I've wanted to have on the show pretty much from when I started this thing. So very happy it could happen, and get ready for another great, honest conversation. Before we get into that, I want to thank everybody that tuned in last week with my conversation with Aaron Stringer of the Amity Affliction. We actually had a pretty good time last week going to the Taylor Swift show together with a bunch of people from Warped Tour. What a show that was. I mean, I don't know how big into Taylor Swift music you might be. Let me tell you, it doesn't matter. That show was absolutely insane. I have never seen production like that. So if you have the means, go check out that show. Also, like I said, there's like 5 more Warped Tour dates or something. They're going down to Florida. If you are in that neck of the woods, you should really check out the final Warped Tour dates as well. And just announced, Silverstein, my band, we're going out on a pretty massive fall tour playing our first record from start to finish, as well as greatest hits, for its 15-year anniversary, When Broken Is Easily Fixed. We have support from Hawthorne Heights, As Cities Burn, and Capstan. It's going to be a great tour going all over the U.S. and parts of Canada. Tickets are going on sale this Friday, so check it out. The URL is whenbrokeniseasilyfixed.com. Also, as a reminder, if you want to get in touch with me, if you want to write me an email, it's real easy, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We're on all the social media sites as well, so add us on there. Be sure to like us on Facebook. And if you like the show, feel free to write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. And if you really, 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 really like the show, you should become a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. I'm not going to go into any details at all, but if you want more content, if you want bonus episodes, if you want all this stuff, more interaction with me, head to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess to check it out. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. I'm also welcoming a couple new sponsors to the show. You'll be hearing ads for them later. Thank you so much for the support. And of course, if you're in the market for what they're selling, definitely check it out. All right, without further ado, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Tyler Carter of Issues.
Turn it up loud. Living the dream of war. Living the lifestyle that we want. Not a damn thing gonna change me. I'll tell them where I'm from. We're all young and dirty. Living the dream of war. Living the lifestyle that we want. Not a damn thing gonna change me. I'll tell them where I'm from. We're all young and dirty.
I'm here, Lead Singer Syndrome, with Tyler Carter, the illustrious Tyler Carter, a guy I've wanted to have on the show since I started. Let me throw away my gum. I'm like chomping into the phone.
I just threw mine away.
I have wanted to have you since I started this thing.
How long have you been doing it?
Dude, coming up on 3 years.
Wow.
The first one I ever did, I recorded it on Warped Tour in 2015, actually with Caleb from Beartooth. It was
okay.
The first one I ever did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like my demo, and it became episode 1. And every time I've done it, every time I've, you know, gone through like, okay, I'm out of people. Who can I ask? I'm like, Tyler, I want to, and I try to get through to management and everything. Right. But here we are on Warped Tour, and I just basically just came up to you and was like, let's talk.
I've only done a couple of podcasts, but I think it was back before podcasts were like actually interesting.
Right.
Unless it was like, very, you know, I mean, it just wasn't that popular podcast.
No, it's exploded. And yeah. This show's done really well.
Especially
and
now that you can, do you put yours on Spotify?
I actually, music? Mine's not on Spotify just because I always play music on my podcast.
Uh-huh.
So, at the end of this, I'll probably play like your new solo song because I want people to hear it. You know, and because of that, I think it gets weird with Spotify because they play music and they pay whatever royalties, right. So that gets weird. So I'm not really sure how to go about that.
So you host it on your own site? Or
no, it's like on iTunes and stuff.
Cool,
it's on iTunes. It's on all the podcast platforms. So it's legitimate. Just Spotify started doing podcasts only a little while ago, and I guess because Spotify is just so huge, it's, you know, it's obviously a big player in the game now. But I don't know why people want to listen to podcasts on Spotify.
I think it's cool.
On your phone that
I think, you know, I'll attest to this. Podcasts are like the perfect pastime for road trips.
Totally.
Or being in the car or being stuck in traffic. If it's not like listening to podcasts or like listening to like my favorite artists like doing interviews or like comedy podcasts or whatever, then it's like watching conspiracy videos on YouTube. You know what I mean?
No, like, totally. It's. I mean, I'm the same way. And part of this show is to fill a void that you don't have long form interviews with people very often, and specifically with you. You do very few interviews. You don't do that many at all.
I feel like I've shied away from it because I don't have anything to promote, or unless it's like when people come to me with like, we want to do like, you know, whether it's like Hot Topics, trying to do like, you know, 15-second, you know, silly stuff. But usually like they get so serious and I just feel embarrassed that I don't have anything to promote. So it's good to like, now we're out here, we're like, my band Issues is about to start like recording a new album. Like we've gone through a lot of changes. Me, like I've been like 2 years like sitting on this solo album that I'm finally able to like put music out. So it's like, now I have things I want to talk about. I don't feel like embarrassed.
I think part of it though is just yourself, and you're such an interesting person that it doesn't matter if you have anything to promote or that you have new stuff coming out with Issues and solo stuff. Believe me, I want to talk about all that stuff because that is super interesting and part of the reason why you're agreeing to this, I guess. But you're an interesting dude, man. You started very young into this career. You have a very iconic voice now in the scene. No one sounds like you. You're one of the most talented singers maybe to ever play in, quote-unquote, a hardcore band.
Oh, and you're feeding my ego.
I'm being honest. And yet you're somewhat, you're secretive in a way, but then once in a while you'll just, I don't know, you'll just say something. You'll be on Twitter and you'll be like, yo, this is the way it is.
I just feel like I forgot about being so public. Like I just, like the last year has been kind of a hiatus for me and my band, all the different things that we were like dealing with, that I almost just like, it was liberating because I wasn't constantly thinking about, yo, I need to post something and I need to think really hard about what I'm going to post today because I need to make sure it gets 500 retweets. You know what I mean? These are the type of things that really start bothering you when you're like, when you're an artist and like, obviously we focus solely on our music and we think our music like does a lot for us, but it sucks that it's good and bad that the time we came up in this industry, the internet helped us, but it also controlled us. So then it's constantly making you feel like you're not quite good enough unless you're getting like enough likes and shit like that. So it was nice this year to be able to disappear and like focus on my life and my music and like
how much of that is just comes with, you know, you're 26 now, which is still relatively young for how much you've done. Basically your second go around with another band, everything you've done, all these albums you put out, you're still very young. But how much of that, you know, mentality with social media or putting yourself out there just comes from, I'm comfortable in my own skin now. I've done some stuff I'm proud of. I've grown as a person. I'm mature now. Do you think that's part of it?
I would say confident. I'm very thankful that I never crashed and burned, and I got to right. this age now in my career that you're right. I'm comfortable with who I am as an artist and what I'm doing, because I think a lot of people crash and burn before they get to that point in their career. I think a lot of people get too comfortable, or you know, maybe they party themselves downhill, or you know, there's a number of reasons why people crash and burn. But I feel like I think about stuff now, and I think, you know what, I think it's cool, and I'm just gonna do it. I'm just gonna be myself, and I don't try too hard anymore. And I won't lie and say that I wasn't a try hard in the past, but I just, yeah, you're right. I mean, you just get comfortable in your own skin, and then you just start to think like, you just start thinking like an artist and like a human, and people like, you know, they appreciate that, I think.
Do you think you were close at some points to crashing and burning? Do you think you could have, there was those, you know, the like the devil on the shoulder, angel on the other side, or you know, whatever proverbial things you want to talk about, or right. could have gone down this path. Were you there? Because I remember, you know, when you were a lot younger, this is 5 years ago on the tour with us.
Yeah.
You know, you were getting into some trouble, smashing some Jack Daniels bottles.
You know, it's crazy. Yeah. I just liked to drink.
It looked like, to me, I was like, this guy, I've seen it before, and I hope this guy goes down the right path because he's a good kid
right.
and a talented kid.
Yeah.
You guys
were good for me, because you guys set me straight. I obviously didn't get to have a lot of fun in my first band. We had some really good success, and we got to that point, but you know, a lot of people, we just butted heads, and there were people doing drugs in the band, and that's one thing that I was always passionately like against. I never wanted to become that kind of rock star.
Right.
And so when I left that band, I just left feeling like, man, I never got to like have any like wild fun. You know what I mean? You can have wild fun without going all the way to like getting hooked on something, you know. But so then when we got the second go around with the issues, you know, that was what, our third tour, our second or third tour. And I was like, now I'm getting in the groove. And back then, you know, we were touring 9 months a year. So after like two or three tours, you're kind of like, yo, I got this. I know what to do. So then we were just having, you know, we got a little wild and a lot of Jack Daniels. And yeah, I remember that night breaking that bottle and then feeling like so bad. And I even grabbed a broom and cleaned it, but it still was like, the most apologetic douchebag like you would have met back then. But
yeah, no, I always, we all like you, and we always have, and we, you know, we were like, well, that's, you know, you never know what Tyler might do on any given day. But that was also in Toronto, in the Opera House. Like, that's like the venue I went to, saw all my favorite bands as
right
a kid.
Right,
we're playing their headlining, it's a hometown show, and then you're just,
yeah, because I recall like a few weeks later it was someone's birthday in your group, and we were at like White Rabbit, and everybody was having fun that night. We were like crushing beer cans on our heads and like getting wild. But you know, you're right, that was like a hometown show for you guys, and that was like, it was just, yeah, it was a weird timing.
No, you're right. And then there was we had a lot of parties on that tour, and then there was the party in Cleveland, which was a banging party. You remember that one? It was because this was our thing. This is our thing, if people don't know, Silverstein, we like to have a party with the whole tour when we can.
Yeah.
You know? And it doesn't always happen all the time, but, you know, once or twice in a tour, if it's someone's birthday or whatever. And the Cleveland venue, it's not there anymore. They've torn it down, which is funny to the story. They let us have that party upstairs in the other smaller venue, and Jerry Roush from Glass Cloud,
he,
like, punched, like, a bunch of holes in the wall.
And that guy was really getting in trouble.
Oh, he did.
He made me look like really good.
And he punched the holes in the wall. But then what was like? Then he denied it. Mm-hmm. But there was cameras that literally our tour manager saw him doing it. So he got in a lot of trouble. And then of course, like, you know, oh, you're banned from the venue. All the bands are banned, and you got to get out now.
Now they're torn down.
And it's torn down anyway. Wow. So those holes, I bet they never even fixed those holes in the wall. But that's besides the point.
We have too many memories. We could get way off topic.
I know, so many memories. But, you know, those were the early days. And I kind of want to go back to the earlier days and talk about how you got started in this whole crazy thing. You know, I know you're from Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and you got a very early start. So tell me about what your family life was like growing up, and when did you realize you could sing or want to sing or whatever?
I think I just I mean, I always was singing as a little kid. I was infatuated with music. I mean, I think a lot of us who are really doing this for a living and like sticking it out. I mean, you guys have been in a band for a long time and you still work and you still enjoy like your career, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of us who are like that have been that way since we were born. You know what I mean? It was like natural. And I think I learned to like whistle and I learned to yodel like from my grandfather pretty much before I could even have like say full sentences. And you know, I grew up just being really like into like boy bands and being really into like Hanson was like my favorite artist growing up. And
did you have, were your parents together? Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two brothers.
Older, younger?
One older, one younger.
Okay, middle child.
Yeah, I'm the middle. But yeah, I grew up and I was always into like NSYNC and I liked R&B, but I loved boy bands. But of course, growing up in Georgia, like country was part of my life.
Sure,
so
yeah.
So I think I've always been like just into every genre, like music, good songs and like good vocals just always spoke to me. So needless to say, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a singer when I get older. You know what I mean? Like, but you know, growing up in a small town, it's not every day that like, it's not every day that like there's like a decent singer coming out of a small town, but also if you are, like, how are you supposed to get noticed? What are you supposed to do?
Yes.
My only option at the time was
for the internet at the time, right?
Right. Well, yeah, when I was little, I probably could have been a pop star now if I had, you know what I mean? If I was back then, but I the only thing you could do was really start a band in a small town. You know, whatever kind of band it was, whether it was just like singer songwriter, whether it was like rock and roll or like country or punk rock or whatever, and it all like me getting into like playing music, and I played drums for a couple bands, I played keyboard for a couple bands. I would just kind of hop around with other musicians in my small town. It all kind of happened at the same time that I was like really into skateboarding.
Right.
So obviously I'm hanging out with all the skater boys. We're listening to like hardcore music. We're listening to, you know, old school like pop punk and stuff. So yeah, that's how I kind of like crossed into like being in a rock band, because it was like, sure, I wanted to be, I would have loved to have been a pop star as a kid, or like a, you know, Billy Gilman, like country singer or something. But that wasn't an option from a small town. Like, I would have never made it. Like, it just, you know, and it's not like I'm telling anybody from a small town, like, just don't give up, you know, give up on your dreams. You're never going to make it. No, because it's just like, how are you going to make it? What do you got to do to get to where you want to be?
Right.
And yeah, if being in a band was like my route at the time, then that's what I was doing.
So. Well, it makes sense. I mean, with what you do, it's like, it's clear as day now. Okay, I grew up into this kind of soulful music and boy bands and stuff, and then I found punk rock and roll, and literally married the two, and that's Issues. In a nutshell, that's
pretty much,
that's,
I guess,
pretty
so
much the band. So it's cool that it just, your story checks out, man. So how did, I mean, you were very young though still, like, how did it happen? I was pretty old relatively speaking when I started in this thing, and I think my first tour I was like 22. Our first record came out when I was 22. My first record, you know, came out, the first Silverstein record. But I mean, how old were you when the first What Was Me record came out, or first EP when you were signed?
I was I signed right before I turned 18, or maybe I just turned 18. But I was basically a senior.
Right. So how does that work? I mean,
it was like the beginning of my
career,
senior year.
You have to give up school. Get on the road. Like, do you need?
I went to military school. I went to military school, and like there was a couple years where I boarded. I was like boarding school. There was a couple years where I went home every day. I was like a day student. Mm-hmm. But then I got to like where I was boarding there. My bands, you know, I used to book our own shows. Like some of my local bands, you know, I was in. I would just find like warehouses and like little bars and little stuff around town, or like in the next town over, and I would just like book our own shows and get other local bands to play, because I didn't know how else to play shows, but like I wanted to play in front of people so bad. But you know, one band led to another. You might play shows with other local bands, and that local band's like a little better.
Yeah.
Than this band, you know, that band that opened for us like was a little better. So next thing you know, I'm like powwowing with those guys, and they're like, you should join our band, dude. And then that band's like, yeah, we're playing a gig in South Carolina next week. And so next thing you know, oh shit, I'm going out of state now. Right. Like, oh, we're on tour, dude. You know what I mean? And so then you might meet another band. And so one band led to another. And I ended up, I was playing drums too, mind you. And so finally, this really cool pop punk band was like, you know, I was singing and playing drums because I was like Aaron Gillespie, like wannabe, but all my bands were like not really metal, but they were pop, like pop punk and stuff. But I ended up, yeah, this one band was like, you know, you're like better at singing than drumming, if you don't mind me saying. And I was like, what? But like, I love drumming. They're like, I don't know, man. I just think you should like consider one or the other. And so I joined that band as a frontman, and we actually like did a bunch of shows. It was called Roll With It. That was the name of the band. And it was like 4 years strong. It was like happy core, like pop punk, you know. And we actually like were traveling and doing shows. And then
and you're like 17 at this point?
I'm 16. I had to have been 16, because I remember one time like getting in trouble for like going to a party and getting drunk or something, and my mom took my car away, but she didn't take the band away. So my guitar player had to pick me up for rehearsal and bring me home at a certain time, and he could pick me up on the weekends to go play gigs.
Okay.
But I was grounded for like 2 months. But I couldn't drive. I couldn't do anything. But the one thing my mom would never take away was music, because she's like, I'll ground you from everything. You come home from rehearsal, you go to your room, no computer, no phone, no nothing. Like, she would be coordinating like my practice schedule.
But she knew, I guess she saw the potential.
She did. And my mom was like always like, and my mom used to run around with like metal bands when she was younger. Like my mom, I just found this out recently, but my mom saw Prince 11 times.
Wow.
As a teen.
Crazy.
11 times. Like, I didn't know that Prince was touring like that. That's like somebody saying, like, coming to Warped Tour and meeting me and be like, this is like the 18th time I've seen you guys.
Right.
It's like, oh my God, you're a lifer. Yeah, my mom was super. So she supported me hard. And but yeah, so that band, I jumped from that band. We played a show with a band called A Path Less Traveled, and that was my first taste at like, you know, like the Amorosa type bands and like the Attacks, you know, the scene. That was like the first time I ever realized there was a scene, like a Warped Tour or AP scene or whatever. I joined that band later, and everybody was like, this guy, like, we got this new singer, he sounds like Johnny Craig. Like, that was like what everybody said to me, and I was like, okay. So
was Johnny Craig an influence you, or is he an influence on you?
I hadn't heard of Amorosa until people started saying that, and then I obviously became like pretty infatuated with Amorosa. And that band, we almost, you know, signed to Rise. Like, we had been in conversations with you know, Rise Records, and a lot of the guys in that band, they just weren't, you know, like I mentioned, like, we're people who were born for this, and like, we want a career out of this. A lot of the guys in the band were just guys who like played instruments,
sure,
and like, they just thought it was fun, like, whatever. They weren't really seeing it as like an opportunity to like have a career. So Michael Vaughn was in that band as well with me, and we both went and working on the Woe Is Me project, and Rise caught wind that like I had joined that band, and our drummer was in a, you know, prior band called Of Machines. And so because there was like, now there was two like people that the label like knew of and stuff, it was like quick to sign and everything. But obviously,
it's crazy,
you know, issues is the like story. Real deal.
You bring up Michael, and he's been with you for, well, sorry, he was with you for a long time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He's not with you now.
Right.
The dynamic must be completely different. How's that for you personally?
It's definitely, it was probably one of the hardest like situations to go through, like the hardest decision, because, you know, our band, this wasn't like just a 1 year band or a 2 year band, like my things in the past. After we hit like 3 years of being a band, I was like, oh my God, are we really doing this? This isn't, you know, I'd never experienced that before, because my whole life of being in bands, it was just like jumping from band to band month after month. And Woe Is Me was just like 1-2 years, like, you know, we had some success, but it just wasn't, nobody was as serious as I was. And me and Michael left and started Issues. Like, I couldn't believe it once we got like 3 years in, and now we're almost 6 years. And I guess, and it's just crazy, but yeah, the dynamic is obviously a lot different now, but we got to that point in this career where we've all grown so different musically. Like, our influences are completely different. The way we write, the things we write, like, how we take the writing serious. And it was hard because Michael was obviously my best friend, and we had been in that two previous bands yeah. together before. So you talk about, like, being musical partners with someone for 10 years and then getting to a point where, you know, Michael's really not like a songwriter, and that's like not a problem because he was a great performer. He was an incredible performer, but he wasn't a songwriter. So it's hard to, like, be the four of us write all the time, and we're very, you know, we work really hard. We work long hours on writing and doing it a certain way, and like having something that we like the sound of. And Michael really didn't understand like what we were doing musically, and didn't see eye to eye. And also, it was kind of difficult. I'm just telling it like it is.
Yeah, sorry. I appreciate that.
But I'm being delicate because I know fans are still, you know, processing. It's hard for me, and this isn't me being selfish or egotistical, but it's hard for me to write what I believe is like a great song or a great top line and I'm very passionate about, and then have to work someone else into the equation and like give up parts that I wrote a certain way and have to simplify them, because, you know, we pushed Michael to start singing as well.
Yeah.
And that was a big jump for him, and I don't believe that he was meant to be like a clean singer, and I don't know if he was comfortable with it. He worked really, really hard, but it just never really took our music where we wanted it to go.
Okay. And I guess that makes him feel like an outsider probably too. He probably doesn't seem like
it wasn't fair to him.
Happy.
It wasn't fair to him as well. So.
I mean, I guess the next question, obvious question, is moving forward, it's been, you know, you just said you guys are getting ready to record the next Issues record, album number 3, and I guess without a screamer, are you guys still going to be incorporating screaming into the music? Are you going to be doing some of it? I know you've done a little bit. There's some videos.
I've been
doing
some
it.
Live, and yeah. You know, Sky's got a certain sound that's very, like, very brutal, very metal sounding scream. AJ's got the most just like mid range, just
traditional,
easy to traditional yeah. fry screaming, and it's like appealing to the ear. We've talked about it. I mean, currently we have 48 songs, I think. We've
really?
Been doing, like, because we've never had this much time, and we got carried away because we just got so into writing. So now we're like 48, maybe more songs, like, whether it's instrumentals, mostly it's top lines that have been, like, we've incorporated drums and guitar and stuff. I've written some screaming parts to some of the songs, like, naturally. A lot of it's mostly singing, but, like, once we get in the studio and we start adding ad libs and we start adding, you know, like, different elements to the production stuff, we'll know, like, okay, this part calls for screaming.
Right.
But we haven't been forcefully, you know, even on the last record, we wrote songs that we didn't think were meant to have screaming. And I know kids are like, well, if you don't scream, then you're not heavy. And that's kind of like, that's hard to deal with, because it's like, we've got songs in double drop C sharp.
Yeah,
like,
you guys tune lower.
We've
than
got
anybody.
Songs on this new record that are like so heavy, we're gonna need like 8-string guitars. But kids don't, you know, fans don't understand that sometimes. That's, you know, it's not just screaming that makes it heavy. But
sure,
I've definitely written some parts, and I think AJ's gonna do some parts. Sky's might do some layers. Like, I know there's a couple parts on the record I want Sky to sing, because he's also like has a really great like R&B voice, and his, you know, family like grew up in the gospel church. Like, his mom is a gospel singer, a classic gospel singer, so he's got a really great voice as well. But it just, what does it call for, you know what I mean?
Totally.
We've written songs on the last record that didn't call for it, but we had to put it in there because we can't have a song where we don't incorporate Michael into the song. And that was hard for us as well, because we felt like sometimes it didn't need that.
You were forcing it.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Of course.
I
totally get it. I mean, I guess the songwriting approach won't really change that much.
then, yeah. is what you're saying.
Exactly. You know, I don't know if people will always, like, I don't know if people will ever really understand where we're coming from in that sense, because they're not in our band. But yeah, like you said, it felt forced. And I think that's why our last record suffered. Yeah, we had a couple of really great songs. Like,
I don't think that at all. I think your last record is incredible. And you know what? I got to say, man, I think touring with you guys early on and stuff, and we were always like, this band's all right, you know? Like, this is back when you were in your right. first EP or whatever on tour with us. And then you put out that last record, and we were like, oh, damn, dude, this is like got some bangers.
We felt like we came a long way as a group. But I think that our self-titled album was so different at the time that I think it really set bars. I think that we like kind of came out of the water with something fresh. And then the last record was obviously a lot fresher. And I think it showcased the band members, like the playing and the composition and everything. But I don't know if fans understood it that way. I think everybody in this band knows that like, all of our friends and other bands and like other musicians loved Headspace.
Yeah. Because it's such a technical record.
Right.
It's so interesting. There's like rhythms. There's things that AJ and Sky are doing that, to be completely honest, I don't know if anyone's done before.
Right.
And then you're there like shredding on the vocals too. So it really was a cool record. So are you saying that the next record you think is going to be maybe a little bit more pulled back?
I don't think it'll be pulled back in any sense. I just think it'll be more polished. Like, I think we have more time to perfect our songs. Like, our first record was like, yo, you have a month to write and then a month to record. And then a second record was like, we had a couple months of, like, writing sessions, but we were also touring a lot in between, and so it wasn't enough focus. This year we literally took a year off to go on hiatus just to focus on making an album. And what does our band want to sound like for the next 10 years? Like, do we want to have, you know what I mean, like,
sure.
Now we're 6 years in, can we make it another 6 years, and never forcing it, like just letting the music be how it is and us like focus on just making everything cohesive and make sense.
Absolutely. And when do you have any time frame at all of when people can expect to hear a track or when the whole thing's going to drop?
I don't know when we'll be able to put out a single, but I know we're recording in October.
Okay.
And so I think our final writing sessions are coming like right after this tour, just like kind of tighten things up. And then record an album in October. But yeah, I don't want anything to feel forced, and I want us to make sure we take our time to make the record right, because we all kind of just like stepped on each other on the last record. It was fun, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. But I'm like, lyrics too, for instance, I'm spending a lot more time to make sure that I have something to say, because I think that's what fans really loved about the self-titled album.
Okay.
Was... Yeah. You know, I was speaking about struggles and I was speaking about things. And not every song is going to be like an emo anthem, but like, you know, I think people really connected with me on that record. And then the last record, I wasn't going through that much, to be honest. Like, life was really good. Like, I felt like on cloud nine. So a lot of the songs were just a lot more fun, which I think might have came across as neglect to our fans at the time, but it also gained us a whole new demographic of people that were connecting with us because the music was groovy and like the parts were cool, and not just because, you know, everything was like a sad song.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Lyrics is a good segue here to talk about your solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And your new track, Pressure, is awesome.
Thank you.
And lyrically, I think it's kind of a nice mix of fun and also serious.
Yeah.
You know, in a way. And obviously, it's written in a style lyrically that's much more, you know, R&B pop
right.
than rock lyrically. Production wise, it's fully
other than the guitar solo, maybe.
Right.
It's fully pop. And you're here, you're on Warped Tour, and you're dropping this, like, in the middle of Warped Tour. You're, like, on stage, everyone's screaming, it's going crazy, and then here you are releasing a solo pop song. What goes through your head with all this is happening? You know, like, where are you, what are you focusing on? It's like, you're pretty all over the place.
It's funny, because, like, a lot of people think I bite off more than I can chew, and I might have in the past, but I've kind of, like, started to create a lane of, like, focus. And everybody, like, always expects, like, the Tyler Carter project and the Issues project to interfere or clash or cross. And I always tell, I've told, like, my previous managers, I've told, like, my label, I've always said I want two different careers in two different worlds. Like,
of course.
You know, and there's so many people that do it. Like, Jared Leto's got a complete acting career and he's got a complete music career. Why can't I have a pop solo career and a rock and roll band career? Like, why? As long as I manage my time well, it should be no one else's business, like, what I do with my two careers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of what Pressure's about. Like, I wrote Pressure. I didn't know at the time, like, what song's going to come out first or anything. Like, I just go with the flow on that. I've got other songs on my record. I'm about to put out a new single in a couple weeks called Focus, and it's very much just about, like, my love life right now and how great it is, and just but Pressure was, I got to a point when I was making a solo record that my label, and you know I'm funded by Rise Records, so
yep,
they came out to listen to the songs, and one of the guys at the label really understood what I was going for and really supported it. He loved me. Sean,
yeah,
great guy, gets it. He loves pop music, he loves R&B, he loves hip-hop, and he understood where I was going with that, and he used to work, I think, with Beluga Heights, so he's been around that world. A different guy at the label was really pushing for me to focus on Issues fans, making, like, an acoustic pop,
right,
or like an acoustic pop, right, record, or acoustic emo record. And I was like, that's not me, though. Like, if I wanted to do an acoustic record, I'd do a flip, an acoustic Issues record. But my solo career is, like, I want to be what I want to be. Like, lyrically, I'm influenced by people like Frank Ocean,
yeah,
and people like Ed Sheeran. I think they're incredible writers. Frank Ocean's colorful, weird, like, eccentric, and Ed Sheeran's, like, pulls on the heartstrings. So between,
totally,
the, between the two of them, like, that's how you get the influence for my solo record. So I wrote Pressure about the label basically trying to change my mind about who I should be as a solo artist.
Right. But it's almost like you have to live two different lives, right? Because and for Rise, it's hard because they're not in the business of selling pop records.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the business of selling heavy rock records.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, obviously, you're signed to them, and they're your label, and you're close with them, and Sean is a great guy. But that's hard because they're trying to sell the same product. Well, if you're the product, they're trying to sell you, but they have to split you in half,
right,
and sell you to two different, completely different groups of people. And that's hard. That's hard to promote because one side of your fans are going to be confused about what the other half is doing. In some ways,
we're in
although
a good
to me it makes perfect sense, but it's very difficult.
But we're coming to a good, like, era because so many artists are crossbreeding, like, their influences. You know, you got rap artists like Lil Uzi Vert or Post Malone who are highly influenced by the rock and roll industry.
Yeah.
And people who like rock music, like a lot of these fans out here at Warped Tour probably love listening to Post Malone. You know, or Halsey, for instance, like people who come from rock backgrounds, and you got bands like Chase Atlantic who are out here on the tour who've got, like, the full band setting, but are ultimately, like, kind of a hip hop R&B band.
Yeah.
I think that, like, we're in a good place, a good era for, like, crossbreeding the two, and with Issues, like, I think the Issues fans really understand my solo music.
I think so too.
Opens so many doors.
It totally. It's very, very different. So what? I mean, what are your long term goals then? I mean, you know, you said early in the conversation, you said, "Oh, their internet was there when I was a kid. Like, I'd be a pop star." Is the goal? Would you love to be a pop star? Would you love to have this solo stuff pop off and just be in the mainstream world? Is that a goal of yours, or is Issues kind of the focus? And then this is something you do kind of for fun, or is it just kind of see what happens?
I mean, I'm just kind of like letting it fly right now. I'm just like seeing where it goes. I mean, there's so many artists and songwriters who have several projects, you know, that they just let them fly with the wind and see, like, you know, I mean, you got like somebody like Jack Antonoff who is like a songwriter and has a great career, like writing songs for people, and then he kind of like has his gig with like Bleachers. I just want to make good music and put it out and see what happens. If somebody's going to book me for a solo tour, then I'm going to go do it. I just got to make sure I manage my two careers, like my solo and like songwriting career and my band career, and totally, I make sure that I don't conflict my schedules, you know what I mean? But I wouldn't mind being a pop star and like being super and being super busy, but getting to like do a few rock tours a year with Issues and play festivals and stuff too. Like, I want to be able to do that, and I don't mind like the grind. I don't mind being busy, you know what I mean? Like, do a solo tour, have a week home, do an Issues tour, do some festivals, do some appearances or whatever, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm just seeing where it goes, and we have to like just
but the solo record is done.
Yes,
you've mixed mastered
four music videos shot.
So what are you going to roll out? Can you spill the beans on when this is happening? When are you going to roll this thing out?
To be honest with you, like, I don't have a manager right now as a solo artist, and I'm so particular that it's kind of like waiting for the right person to come along and collaborate with me on the solo project. Issues is very well managed. Like, we have a great team. But I'm a lot to handle, like, when it comes to like being an artist, 'cause I'm a lot to handle as the front runner of Issues, like the ringleader, you know? So me trying to have that same team manage my solo career too, it's like, it's too much. And I'm too much. So I'm like currently just waiting I'm trying to put together like the right team, and I don't know what my plan is to release the album. I'm hoping to release it sometime this fall, this winter, but I want to have some shows lined up, because I'm a strong believer that FaceTime is important. And you know, from early on in Issues, if we hadn't done 7 tours in a row at the beginning of our career, I don't think we would have blown up that fast. So I can put out singles and put out and get playlisted and do all these great things that you can do with pop music, but I just don't think at the end of the day I'm not going to be satisfied with the result, and I don't think I'm going to grow the way I want to grow unless I'm actually playing shows. So the record's going to come when I figure out my touring situation.
No, it makes sense that for what you're trying to do, more on the pop side of things, to have a manager that understands that world.
Right, and because I don't think a lot of pop stars maybe, but I don't think a lot of these up-and-coming hip-hop, like R&B stars that are really making, you know, get going viral online, I don't think they understand quite how hard it is to like tour nonstop.
Right.
I think I appreciate that about my rock background, because
right, totally, man.
I know what it's like to sleep on the front seat or the, you know, floor of a van, right, and
between two wheel wells. We've
all done that. I know what it's like to take a sink shower and steal honey buns put honey buns in my hoodie just to eat. You know what I mean? Like, those were some hard times, but I'm gonna put out 2 more singles before the summer is over. I'm putting out one either next week or whenever I submitted it already, so whenever it drops, you know. It's hard not having a team, but I think I love that, because I'm just giving it to them raw, you know.
Well, this is great, and I think a lot of people hearing this from the horse's mouth, exactly what's going on, people are gonna understand when they hear this. And I'll definitely play I'll play your song Pressure for sure at the end of this episode. And
awesome.
And it is, like I said, there's not a lot of rock background. Now, I understand that you do a lot of production on your own too. Was this self-produced, or did you have someone working on it?
I worked on the song with Lo-Fi-le, Tyler Accord. He's the twin brother of my bass player.
Ex-Issues member.
And yeah, he used to be in the band. He was our DJ and like primary writer, like he and I. And he's full-time producing now, and I did about 5 songs on my record with him. And yeah, like I he produced it and he did a very great job. But when it comes to like, yo, I kind of want this section to duck out. I'm hearing this kind of beat, like, you know, beatbox a little bit. Like, I want it to sound like that. I put a guitar solo on it. I have like 4 or 5 guitar solos on my record.
Who played the guitar solo? Did you play it?
No, I wish. mostly Drew DeCaro. He plays for Vic Menza and he tours with Miguel. He's a good friend of mine. He's a phenomenal producer, phenomenal cool. guitar player. And then a few solos by Brandon Paddock, who was the engineer. He engineered and mixed the record, like engineered all the vocals. Between them two, both great composers. AJ in Issues, like, refuses to do guitar solo, so I was a bit deprived because I've always wanted like I've always wanted full Santana like on my
totally,
on
man.
My music, and so well, I got carried away.
It absolutely works in that song, and I really like it. You mentioned for a second, you know, how great your love life is going, which congratulations, and I hope all these projects don't get in the way of that.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing you did a few years back is you came out as bisexual,
uh-huh.
and I was actually really, it warmed my heart to see the support that you
right.
felt.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, I'm sure if when you, I don't know if you're reading comments or anything, I'm sure there's mm-hmm. some negativity or whatever, but I felt like it was really a beautiful thing that you came out, you had so much support and love, and I think that that's great, a great thing for the scene. How has that been moving forward with you?
What was great about that whole situation was that, like, once I came out, I don't think I ever saw any negativity past that point.
Great.
I think because of my androgyny and my personality and some of my friendships with like very androgynous and very like gay people, I would always get like called fag or just get kind of dragged on the internet like because of that. Once I came out, they were kind of like, oh. You know what I mean? Like nobody really made those comments because they were like, what are you gonna say? Like, oh, fag, and I'm like, yeah. They're gonna be, oh, you know what I mean? Like, it was like the fact that I was in the closet was more ridiculing for me than when I came out, because people were like, oh, you know, now it makes sense, or oh, finally he owns up to it. It was weird. It was kind of like just this weird clapback, but it was good. I got a lot of support. And
do you feel a weight off your chest, I guess, too? Probably.
Oh, I definitely did, and I think it helped so much because, you know, after that, I was able, you know, I wrote the song Never Lose Your Flames, which was like a very empowering song for a lot of, I mean, I meet fans every day on Warped Tour. This is like the hub of meeting fans that get
you
to express. Yeah,
we
do a signing. We have like pride flags like at our merch table, and like that's just like very you know, it's like a really strong symbol for me. And a lot of fans that I meet get to tell me their story about coming out or transitioning or like having mm-hmm. top surgery or like the way I got them through like coming out to their families and stuff. And it's like that kind of confidence makes it easier for them, because, you know, not having enough confidence, it doesn't soften the blow of coming out to families. Like owning it and being confident and being like strong and powerful of like, this is me, take it or leave it, then their families are kind of like, all right. You know what I mean? Respect.
Sure,
like,
okay.
It's kind of like,
was
you
your
know?
Family supportive of you? Was
it? Oh, definitely.
Awesome.
My mom was like, she's like, oh, I knew that. I wondered when you were going to know that. She's like, I knew that when I snuck a hidden camera video of you dancing to Spice Girls when you were 8. Like, she was like, I knew it, you know.
Well, that's...
So, I mean, it was definitely like very empowering to be able to do that and come out. And actually, you know what's funny? I'm coming out to you now, but this is funny because it's not like it's not that different. But I didn't know what pansexual was until like last week when Brandon Urie just recently like discussed that he was pansexual, or like he guessed that he was, because he just connects with people, and it doesn't matter if you're
right.
gay, straight,
right.
bi, trans male, trans female, you know, butch, or whatever, you know, whatever You are. Like, I just connect with people. I connect with laughter. I've always connected with laughter and, like, personalities. So I guess that makes
more,
me
so
pansexual.
You're more like that. Okay.
Yeah. I'm currently in love with a man, so, like, it doesn't really matter, like, what I am anymore because, you know, I mean, the deed is done. Yeah, I never heard that term before, which baffles me because I'm a part of the LGBT.
In the community, absolutely. And I think him, and I heard the same thing on some message boards and stuff that I'm part of, people going, well, you know, pardon my ignorance, what is pansexual?
Right.
And you know what? I got to be honest too, is that I thought I knew what it was, but then when I heard it explained, I was like, oh, okay, now I wasn't exactly correct on this stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's I think it's great that he's come out as this, just as awareness of what that is.
Right.
Because a lot of people, I'm sure, had the same conversation.
Obviously, we're all very thankful of, like, the amount of gender fluidity that runs through our industry, and, like, pop culture is, like, becoming so much more self-aware and, like, you know, accepting of, you know, like, the queer community and just, like, you know, androgyny and all that. And I love that because I'm obsessed with, like, David Bowie, and I think that that he's a legend because he did it before, and before it was, like, part of pop culture, you know what I mean? But yeah, I never heard pansexual, so I was like, I understand that. Yeah, that's me. Totally.
Right. Well, there you go. Okay, here it is, pansexual. Cool, man. Well, geez, I don't have much else to ask you. I think we covered a lot of stuff. Warped Tour's been okay for you? How's your voice holding up?
I love
this. Sounds a little raspy.
It's raspy now because I'm speaking quietly for the sake of the tone of this interview.
Oh, okay.
But I did just come off stage, so I got a little bit of phlegm.
Yeah.
I love this interview because I didn't, other than the fact that I'm holding this mic right in my face, I feel like we were just catching up because we haven't,
of course,
like,
dude.
We haven't really sat down and talked in a couple years, and I just feel like we were just, like, kind of chatting and catching up.
That's what I try to do, man, is just keep it natural. Like, you know, I look down at some of the notes I made a couple times, but for the most part, we're just here shooting the shit. And
another reason why I love podcasts, because all my homies are doing them. So when we do them, it doesn't feel like I'm getting, like, really interviewed. It just feels like I'm talking to
them. No, and what's great too is, dude, I'm not going to edit this at all. Like,
great.
This is just going to be exactly this. There was no breaks, no stops, whatever. So people will hear you say what you want to say. It's not like, you know, I'm sure you know when you do. The UK publication is the worst for this shit. But you'll, like, you'll talk for like 20 minutes and it'll be some headline. It'll be like something ridiculous that you'll have brought up.
Like, I know, like, or it's like out of this one, it would be Tyler Carter doesn't know what pansexual is. You know what I mean?
Well, I like that you admitted that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I like that you admitted that. And, you know, people not inside the community are going to feel like, okay, that's cool. I shouldn't be afraid to ask questions about, you know, about that stuff. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. As long as you're like, as long as you're respectful, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot to learn. I still feel like I'm learning every day about my own community, but the fact that I'm willing to learn and, like, be delicate and be respectful, even if I do slip up, and being apologetic, you know what I mean? Like, there's been a couple times on this tour where, and it made me feel awful, but there was a couple times on this tour where, you know, I spoke to someone, you know, of the trans community and addressed them by the wrong pronoun, like, just off meeting them, you know what I mean? And that's horrible to me, but it's like knowing that I did that and, like, and then addressing, like, and then saying sorry and, like, you know, trying to understand. But yeah, it's a learning curve, and I think that's what's really important is just being aware. Like,
I mean, nobody's perfect,
man. Right.
Cool. Well, thanks, man, and we'll catch up more tonight. Come over and have a beer under the tent,
let's.
Or whatever. Well,
sure.
Hey. Great talking to you, Tyler. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, man.
So there it is with Tyler. I want to thank him so much for doing this, and it was worth the wait, right? For 3 years. Great conversation. I wish Issues all the best. And of course, I wish him all the best with his solo stuff. And it is pretty cool how he seems to have two careers going on at the same time. So I played a little clip of Issues during the intro. Make sure you check out some of their music. They got some great stuff. But I feel like we don't play enough R&B on the show. So I'm going to leave you with a Tyler Carter solo track. Here is his new single, Pressure. On Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
I remember when you told me I should go back to the old me. before the tailors and the tattoos, before the Perry on it, OG. So far left and it feels so right. You sit in the back telling me how to drive, but I need a taste of someone who's gonna love me for me and my new attitude.
Put me in overtime, try to control my mind.
Had enough of this pressure, don't give me this pressure.
It's weighing down on me, I feel like honestly
I don't fuck with this pressure, don't give me this pressure. Feels like voodoo, cause I'm always in control. I be like the hoodoo, you think you talking to. Ain't no money or pussy power, no label control my mind. Make the rules up as we go and I ain't about to stand in line. So far left and it feels so right. You sit in the back telling me how to drive, but I need a taste of someone who's gonna love me for me and my new attitude.
Put me in overtime, try to control my mind.
Had enough of this pressure, don't give me this pressure.
It's weighing down on me, I feel like honestly
I don't fuck with this pressure, don't give me this pressure. I'm Frankensteining, they wanna put me back in the lab. If I'm gonna be grinding, if I'm gonna be making this scroll, I'm gonna do it my way. Bitch, get out of my head, I'm gonna do it my way. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.